Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Timo Albers Daly, and we are back to preview this weekend's Canadian Grand Prix. And when I say we, I mean it's not the three of us, and it's not the Chuckle Brothers this week, because it is, in fact, the dynamic duo, because I'm joined by the one and only Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I spent yesterday at London Concours at the Honourable Artillery Company. I always want to call it the Royal Artillery Company. But yeah, it was good. Saw some very nice cars, very nice classics.
And very nice photos while you were there.
Yes, thank you.
Which, small plug, you can find on Ellie Mae's Instagram. We've got the news for this weekend's Canadian Grand Prix, and we do have some Canada-specific news, but we'll leave that for a little minute, because despite there being no news for a while, they then had quite a bit of news in about 48 to 72 hours prior to recording today, and I keep checking my phone to make sure that there isn't anything else that's coming out just last minute, as would be typical for this podcast. But first bit of news on the agenda is that Sergio Perez has been retained at Red Bull until at least the end of 2026, and got a bit of a mixed reaction, I'll say. So I'll save my couple of bits on it first, just because I was on the fence about it, and then see what you've got to say there, because initially, a bit surprised, but it does also make a lot of sense, because he has had a mixed season so far. But he's already had four podiums this year, and only one of them was a P3, which is in China. The other three were all P2s. Yeah, he DNF'd in Monaco after qualifying at the back of the grid, due in part to the weakness of the car, and Magnussen being Magnussen. But he's not had too terrible a time of it. I think it's because those first two races of the season were pretty dull that you just kind of forget they happened and that he was second and kind of doing his job as rear gunner. But then on the flip side of that, he's P5 in the championship. He's not won a Grand Prix since Baku last year, which is mental. But then he did finish in the championship P2 last year, has helped them win the Constructors every year that they've been together, I think, aside from 21. And the bit that I'll take with a pinch of salt is that maybe part of this is to do with the fact that the amount of sheer money he brings in from a sponsorship perspective is helping to fund Verstappen stay there so that he doesn't look at Red Bull's central weaknesses and go elsewhere. But I don't know how much that necessarily factors into it. And if we look at it purely based on results, Perez is the kind of option that is best at the moment, weirdly, if you don't want to shake the boat too much. Ricardo, as much as we love him, if we look on just the results, he's only scored points in Miami and confessed himself that he wishes he was doing better. Horner loves him, as we know, but potentially can't justify promoting him as much as he would wish to. Tsunoda scored points in five of the last six races, and it is his fourth year, and he's doing a pretty good job with the car that he has, and he's really bending himself into that team, as we've seen. He only scored points in six races last year, though, which might be factoring into a little bit the thinking, okay, big improvement this year, but how sustainable is that? Sainz hasn't finished lower than fifth this year, and has been on the podium four times, including the win in Australia, which arguably should have been a race that Perez should have won, considering his role within Red Bull. And he does sit ahead of Perez currently by one point in the championship, despite having competed in one less Grand Prix than Perez, which is not ideal. But again, Sainz, if you bring him or anyone else potentially into that second seat, is more likely to fight Verstappen, whereas after start of 22, Perez kind of realised, yeah, that's not happening, and even if I try, that might not be allowed as such, and it's very much in that second fiddle, that very much second driver role of you support the team and you do everything there and you get the odd race win, but you're not going to get the title. And I think as well, you've got this whole situation where it strengthens the argument that RB is very much trying to be a separate team from Red Bull now. So the promotion from a driver from one team into the other is not as clear cut as it used to be, which is the same for the junior drivers like Lawson and Uwesa, but helps promote that narrative a bit. So Perez is the safe pair of hands, but at the same time, he does need the better results before the summer break, I think, just to help justify it. Because if he ends up costing them constructors this year, then Red Bull may go back to their old ways of chopping and changing, and you'd be surprised if there weren't some clauses in that contract that say if you don't pull your socks up by X date, then we can get rid of you before the end of this contract. But what do you make of all of that?
I sort of agree with you in that when I first saw the announcement, I was a bit like, why? And then I was like, but it does kind of, then when I started looking into it, it kind of makes sense. I guess the shock is because it's a 2-year contract. It's not one. I think that's where the biggest shock comes from, that you're going to extend for 2 years. I guess obviously in these contracts, it always has the performance
That's what I'm
based.
saying about the clause. This must be in there
Yeah.
because if it's a blanket 2 years, you'd be very surprised.
Yeah. And I then sort of basically compared him to the other top five, or well, the other top four, because obviously he's in fifth. Like you said, he's got f four podiums, which even in my mind, I'll admit, I don't remember him getting. I think because maybe at the start of the year, we were like, oh, it's just going to be Red Bull dominance. Maybe we weren't quite focusing on them. But like you said, he's got four podiums, three of them are seconds, only one is third. He's got the one DNF, which I would say 85% wasn't his fault, and he's only finished out of the top five once, which is Imola. You compare that to Sainz in fourth, only 1 point ahead. He's got the same amount of podiums, but obviously three thirds and one win. No, but he hasn't got any finishes out of the top five besides not starting in Saudi Arabia due to appendicitis, which I think we can forgive him for that. Norris in third, only 6 points ahead. So it is still really tight between fifth, fourth, and third.
And it's that
Again,
race win that's making the difference there.
yeah, exactly. It's again four podiums, one third, 2 seconds, one win. And he's finished at the t outside of the top five twice. Bahrain and Saudi Arabia has no DNFs, which I guess is what is helping him be above Sainz and Perez. Then you've got Leclerc second, 31 points ahead, five podiums with a three thirds, a second, and a win. No DNFs, no finishes outside the top five. Verstappen in first. The kicker is that he's 62 points ahead, with six podiums, five of them wins, one second, one DNF, which wasn't his fault, mechanical failure, and one finish outside the top five, which was a sixth in Monaco. So just out. Like you said, I think Perez should have been there in Australia to win that one when he got DNF, but I think they did say that he had damage, which is why he didn't go through the grid. I can't quite remember whether we ever saw him making contact with anyone or whether he hit a curb or something.
It
But
was one of those ones you'd kind of suspected he had damage with his car, but we never saw anything because there was enough stuff going on elsewhere and it wasn't anything too significant to warrant a replay or anything like that. It was just kind of, I'll find out about that after the race when I've got time to, but it wasn't anything too obvious and just shows how compromisable the cars are, how sensitive they are, that what was essentially a small bit of damage, because if it was massive, we'd have remembered about it and how much that can impact a car. And again, it's one of these things where I think it's just the safest pair of hands. You don't, why rock the boat? It's not necessarily the strongest driver lineup, but in terms of a very clear determination of who's number one and who's number two, you know what's what. It's a firmly established relationship. Whereas if you put Yuki in that car, you'd be disappointed if he didn't go for it because he finally got this opportunity. Potentially, we don't know what 2026 will bring. Red Bull could be at the back for all we know. And he's got to go for it whilst he still can. Same for Ricciardo because he wants that hunger back. Sainz, exactly the same, because if he goes to a different team, who knows what fortunes lie for him there. So he would obviously take that opportunity for as much as he can. Whereas Perez, he knows he'll get the odd race win if and when he's capable of it. But when he's not, he's going to be that rear gunner. And I think they're banking on him recovering and for the other drivers that were potentially on for that seat to do what they're doing, that Ricciardo won't improve significantly, that Yuki won't be able to sustain this run of good points as he hasn't been able to in previous years. And why would you put a rookie in like Lawson or Rosso or anyone else into that Red Bull, you'll wait until next year to see what RB does and then replace Ricciardo or Tsunoda or both with those rookies there, depending what happens with them. And at least you know that you've got the stability there, which at the moment maybe a team like Red Bull needs because you've got Newey leaving. There's potentially other stuff going behind the scenes there, depending on what the power struggle turns into, as we keep hearing little murmurings about there. So at least on the driver side of it, you know that you've got nothing to worry about. But it does just seem potentially a boring decision, but not necessarily a bad one. It's just frustrating in some ways because we've still got that idea in our heads of RB is still Toro Rosso, and therefore you should get promoted into Red Bull. Whereas at the start of this year, they were reiterating the fact that we're a separate entity, which they're not, but they are, and they kind of this is further strengthening that argument of we want to take the fight to everyone else, and maybe we'll be allowed to a bit more now because we're not as directly tied to each other in that kind of it's that weird area now.
I think as well, if you look at, since Daniel Ricciardo left, no one's taken it to Max. Both Gasly and Albon got dropped halfway through. No, Albon didn't get dropped halfway through the season, but obviously Gasly did. And both of them struggled whilst Perez hasn't brought it to Max, but has struggled a little less. And you probably, if you're looking at Red Bull right now, it seems that that car must be quite a hard car to drive. I'm not saying the others aren't, but I think you need a perhaps a particular skill set that to be able to drive that car. And you've got to think who on the current grid that's available would be able to perhaps drive that car. And the only person that's available without a contract other than Perez would be Carlos Sainz. And obviously they had those talks and we obviously don't know what happened. Maybe Sainz didn't want to go there. So then who do you then fall back on? What are the other options? Because I mean Ricciardo isn't his performance isn't quite proved him worthy yet to be back in Red Bull.
I think this
As
is why
much
this is potentially so surprising that the announcements come this early in the year and it's not even after the summer break or anything when you've got a bit more time to analyze, you've got more data to analyze, you've got more time to think things over, and you're thinking, why is everyone in such a rush to confirm this seat when surely you'd want to see how everyone else does first and have a bit more data, whereas you've only had, what, 7 or 8 races now. And it's, I mean, they even gave De Vries longer than that before they decided to get rid of him. So it's a bit curious, and I think Perez reminded me a bit of Bottas in that when he first got into the team, he was hungry. He took it very much in the early parts of the season, and then he was worn down by the season's end. And then towards the end of his time at Mercedes, this whole Bottas 2.0, 3.0, 4.0, whatever version we got to, by the fourth or fifth version of him, it didn't really transpire at all. And in 2021, he was there, but you didn't take too much notice of him because it was just always Lewis and Max the whole time. And Perez is kind of maybe that he's reminding me of Bottas in 21 of he's also there, but he's not the main focus anymore. And I wonder where that goes after this.
yeah, I guess with Bottas, most of the time he was there, sort of, so that if Lewis was for some reason not there, Bottas always kind of was. And you kind of, it's a bit more on and off with Perez. You don't quite know whether he's going to be there to pick up the pieces or not. You're seeing, obviously, the contract, going back to contracts, they seem to just be getting, as every season goes on, they seem to be getting earlier and earlier. It's strange, but I did think signing Perez so early on, does this show that they're kind of scared that they're going to lose Max? I mean, you hear rumors, and whilst I don't like listening to rumors as such, they usually come true. And if Red Bull begin to underperform and Max expresses his wish to leave, what happens? If you haven't had then, if you haven't got Perez, that means you then have two unknown drivers in your stable.
Yeah, it'd be the
You
potential thing
don't
if
want that.
Max will leave regardless. It doesn't matter if Perez is there or not, but at least if you Newsmax, you've got Perez there and you know what you're dealing with. And regardless of who's in that other seat, if it's Ricciardo, Lawson, Tsunoda, Sainz, whoever, they need time to bed into the team. Whereas Perez, you know what you're going to get, and potentially he'll thrive even more then because he doesn't have to be going up against Max and you get a better measure of him, but at least you know kind of what you're going to get out of it. So, but it's very interesting what kind of chess they're playing because they're looking at all these different moves that have been being made ahead, and they're just banking on having this one rook regardless. And they're like, we're going to use him in some way. We don't know the best way yet, but we'll figure it out. And just at least we know we can move forwards, backwards, and sideways, and that's useful. We don't know how yet, but at least we know we've got that in our back pocket.
Yeah, I agree. I think sort of the only kicker is obviously maybe what happens to the other drivers at RB, which we've already said Ricardo hasn't quite, his performance hasn't quite proved it that he
If he doesn't
goes there.
do, if he doesn't have a turnaround by the end of the year, I wouldn't mind him going off to IndyCar and maybe trying the Triple Crown, something like this, because I think he'd do quite well in IndyCar. We've seen drivers that struggle immensely in Formula One have great success in IndyCar, and even Formula Two drivers that should have maybe got a shot in F1 then go over to IndyCar and succeed there. So maybe that's what he needs there, and I wouldn't mind seeing a few other drivers there, but that's a whole other subject for all of the time because we'll get very distracted. So I'll instead just I'll go on.
I don't know, I was just going to say, I just kind of feel sorry for Yuki in some ways because he is somewhat stuck. I think it's almost his very early years in his first couple of seasons where he made those sort of mistakes and he was quite hot-headed have almost been kept with him because you think
It's
he
almost
had
the sort of thing he could never do anything enough to earn the promotion or to be considered
yeah.
for. It was kind of even when Ricciardo came back, it was like, oh, he's going to go to Red Bull. And Yuki said, like, but I've been here 3 years. And I'm like, I don't care. It's
Yeah.
kind of like how Gasly, you've gone back to the junior team and maybe we'll get you back, but we never actually had any actual intention of bringing you back into Red Bull. It was always, you're just going to stay there until we find someone to replace you with. And if you find someone else, cool. If not, not our problem. We've got 10 million other rough RB juniors waiting to come up and replace you.
Yeah, at the minute he's a safe pair of hands for RB.
Yeah, an interesting one. And it's kind of, I think, as well, it's perhaps shocking because we've had so much shocking news in F1 lately that you get a slightly tame announcement that you're not quite sure what to do with it. Then you're like, what are you really up to? What's the actual plan? Just tell me. But Aston Martin, meanwhile, they're scratching their heads, wondering what the hell is going on as well, and possibly having ex-Ferrari team principal Mattia Binotto join them in the role of chief technical officer after Andrew Green left in 2023. It'd be a more traditional role for him where he's from, which I think is probably better suited for him because team principal, I think we can agree, was not necessarily the best fit. Your thoughts?
I think he will be at more be more at home with the technical side of things. Although it does sort of, I am kind of a bit cautious in the sense that, I mean, I don't quite know what a chief technical officer does, but it's more that they oversee, isn't it? Rather than do the actual engineering sort of side of things, whether because it's not as a, like, you know, it's not team principal, he's not overseeing everything. Maybe that he'll be okay with sort of overseeing just that side of things. I'd almost kind of like to see him more back in, I think he'd be even more at home perhaps in the engineering side of things, because during Ferrari's successful, really successful years, was he engine side of things? I can't remember.
Became head of the engine department in 2013.
Yeah, so he kind of comes from that engine background. Oh, so he was a chief technical officer of Ferrari then. So he must have been doing a good enough job then for them to be like, would you like to be our team principal? Although at that kind of time they were getting through team principals, kind of like how Alpine are getting through personnel at the minute.
Very nice survey for in a minute.
Yes, thank you. I would like to see him back, and I would like to see him sort of at home
I think
in
this is something
whatever
with a
he
lot of people in F1 where they are really good in a specific role And then they get promoted into a different department, and you're looking at them and go, why? You were
Yeah.
really good here. That doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be good here. It's kind of, to use a governmental analogy, you're an expert in Asia, in history of Asia. We're going to put you in charge of water treatment. Why?
Yeah.
This is my area. Why put me in something that I don't need the variety? Let me do what I'm good at. And like, no, you're going to be team principal. And it's like, it's kind of why Gunter Steiner, I think, as much as a character as he is, and he obviously helped promote the sport, I don't think team principal was ever the best role for him. He was better in this kind of a spokesperson, perhaps, and a mascot in a lot of ways, but his skills lay elsewhere, and I think that's where he really should have been allowed to shine. If he does ever come back, he should be in one of those kind of roles rather than the team principal kind of thing. And maybe a bit like Zak Brown and Andrea Stella and McLaren, you've got Zak as the face of it so that Stella can just get on with the work behind the scenes.
Well, that was also kind of like how with Zak Brown, he started off as team principal and realized he wasn't good for the job.
But he actually had
And
despite his many flaws that you might not like about him, he realized that at least, and was like, right, I need to step aside here, and I'll be the show pony. You get on with the actual work.
it's like, you hear of so many people start off as engineers and then they get up into the higher roles and again get higher and higher and higher. And that's how most standard companies work, is that you sort of get promoted. But the problem is it's a different kind of skill set. You can learn how to, you can engineer sort of an
This
engine
isn't
or
the advert for the Navy
aero.
where you can fix a bike so you can fix a tank. No, just let me focus on this one thing I know how to really do.
It's a different kind of skill set in that trying to then move yourself to then looking after a team of people.
Yeah, like you wouldn't demote Toto into the head of like the engineering department. Just wouldn't feel
No.
right. Like, he knows business, he studied business, he's going to be put in charge of a business. He makes business excellent. Makes sense. Let's put him in charge of fuel development. No, he doesn't know anything about this. That's not going to help. He needs to be advised by the right people to help make those decisions, but he shouldn't be in charge of just that one bit.
Yeah, you've got to have those people skills, which
Yes.
part of me looks at Bonotto and thinks you sounds mean, but I'm like, you don't have that. I could see him rather being wanting to be like sat in a corner of an office, doing his own thing, doing his drawings, being left alone, rather
Yeah.
than having to deal with a team of people that he's having to look after and make all these decisions.
Well, I think this is what I said a while ago. I'm not sure if on this podcast or somewhere else I said this about Stella, in terms of he felt very mechanical in some of his interviews when he first took over in that role, whereas Zach, obviously, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's showbiz. He's entertainment. He's there with his walking stick and his top hat, and he's having a good time with it. And it's kind of, yeah, we want to hear from Stella occasionally, but we don't need to all the time, because just let him get on with it, and we'll get the statements from him. But if you want to know, if you want the 30 seconds for TV, you go to Zach. You know what's going on there. I think some teams have that really well, and other teams don't. And Christian Horner's that nice balance of the two, where he knows what's going on, but he knows how to play. He's got that balance there, but not every person has that. Fred's another one who's got this very good capability of doing both of those roles with his own unique twist on it. And to segue into the other bit of news, Alpine just don't know what the hell they're doing, it would seem, at the moment, which is not surprising, because it doesn't appear they've known what they're doing for quite a while. But they've had another departure from the team, this time in Rob White, who has been with the team for 20 years. And unless I missed something obvious, no real reason given, just he's leaving. We wish him the best of luck. I'm like, why exactly? So I'm not really sure what they're up to. They seem to know that they need to make changes, but so far, if there's a constructive pattern as to what they're attempting to do, I'm not sure what it is. And before we even get to the other bit of news to do with them, you go back a few years, not even that long, they were looking at a potential Alonso Piastri lineup, and now they've got Gasly and an empty seat. And they're saying, we've got lots of options. We're like, yeah, but look what you could have had if you'd got your shit together a bit sooner, and if you don't keep resetting your 100 Grand Prix plan because we don't even know which iteration you are of that now. It's at least five, it feels like. So this seems curious because I'm all for like having a bit of healthy turnover, but when you've got someone who's that experienced, who was there when Alonso was winning his championships, and you just get rid of them, you're kind of curious as to, was this a voluntary retirement? Was this a forced thing? And I feel like with these kind of announcements, you want to be a bit clearer because you just raise more questions and we're not probably going to get those answers for a while.
Yeah, when I sort of saw the news, it's again, is it all that surprising? I'm not sure. I mean, if you look at where Alpine are at the moment, Bruno Famin and those even higher up, they're clearly not happy with the current results. No one would be. And the way, and just the way Alpine has gone in general, but you can't just, the answer isn't just people leaving. I mean, if you look at how many people have left in the last year or so, Laurent Rossi, CEO, got the sack. Otmar Szafnauer,
He
team
and
principal.
he himself was only there for about 5 minutes after Otmar left.
Obviously, Otmar Szafnauer, team principal, gone. Alain Prémain, sporting director, gone. Pat Fry, chief technical officer, left for Williams. Matt Harmon, technical director, gone. Dirk De Beer, head of aero, gone. Bob Bell, design engineer, left for Aston Martin. They've now pretty much, well, got rid of Esteban Ocon, which we'll go on for later. I mean, they've kind of argued that him leaving is down to like a restructure within the business, but did they not just go through a restructure?
The
Like,
restructure is quite a long one, and they don't seem to be, and it seems to be the same few roles that they keep turning over quite a bit. So
they must be running out of people.
well, you said before about you promote from within, and it's like, right, you've just graduated from university. Would you like to be our technical officer? No, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. Neither do we. We're LP.
You joke about that,
I predict.
but so I had, when I did an internship in mid
What is this
2019,
for Alpine?
mid 2020, not for Alpine. I worked, so he was just leaving his internship. He did the one obviously the year previous. And then he went on and graduated and joined Alpine in a finance, sort of a lower, maybe like graduate finance, financial role, something like that. So he's about our age, mid-20s, 25, 26, 27. I think he's now pretty much head of finance. So I'm not
Nothing
saying
against this person, but
no.
that doesn't seem the healthiest promotion technique that a company should use.
No, like he might be incredible at his job. But that is an exceptional acceleration. I mean, I'm not sure I'd want that
That's
responsibility.
a larger amount of acceleration than the Alpine car has,
Well, exactly.
which is concerning, frankly. But yeah, it's a very curious thing because it's a team that last year they were on the podium twice. They had decent results, and yeah, you needed to fix your car a little bit because it wasn't perfect. But instead of even Mercedes with their radical turnaround, they still haven't made themselves worse than they were last year. They're just differently not brilliant. I mean, Alpine's not a small outfit. It's basically Renault. You've got the funds. You've got everything in place that you supposedly wanted, and you keep changing all these things for improvements, and instead you're floundering. And I'm just curious as to what does the team need at this point. I'm just kind of, there's talk of Flavio Briatore coming back, which there's all kind of question marks there about should that even be allowed in the first place, because what's a life ban if it doesn't actually mean life? But that's a separate conversation for another day. And yeah, I was gonna say, if there's a pattern here, I'm not Sherlock Holmes, and I'm not sure if Sherlock Holmes can figure that out just right now, and not just because he's fictional.
You know how Jesse's always said, if Ferrari are doing well in F1, then their road ca cars are lacking and vice versa. In kind of the wider context, in if we add sort of Renault into this, Renault are doing really well with their road cars at the moment. They've just won car of the year with their Scenic, so maybe it's not just Ferrari that this sort of happens to.
An interesting theory, and I would like to measure this further when we have more time and more data. I'd like to come back to this at the end of the year and see what we can do with that. Because again, it's this curious thing of last year, by this point, we were looking at McLaren and going, what a shambles is going on there. And they had this excellent turnaround. And from a neutral perspective, I'd love that for Alpine, but there's nothing there that makes me think they're going to do that. Whereas McLaren, you're like, there is the potential there for something. They just really need to get it together. Whereas Alpine, I'm just like, I have no idea, genuinely no idea. And that does kind of work its way into the next new segment, which is Esteban Ocon leaving Alpine at the end of this year, which initially I found it a little amusing because it came a few days after his post on Instagram about all the talk about him after Monaco. And I should have guessed as soon as he said, I'm perfectly happy with the team and I'll be racing in Canada. So, like, I should have known that. It's like, he's going to retire from them at the end of the year, isn't he? It's always when they say, I'm perfectly happy here, that you get the divorce about two days later. And sure enough, that's what happened here. And Monaco obviously wasn't the nail in the coffin for it. This has obviously been on the cards for a while, but it probably didn't help things either and made them think, yeah, we're going to announce it now. And Ocon's it's a curious thing because he scored points in Miami, but before that, his best result was a P4 in Las Vegas for last year. And it's interesting to kind of part ways with them after a strongish year last year. I mean, he got a P3 in Monaco, as we mentioned, and he had a strong run towards the end of the year, scoring points in 7 of the 11 Grand Prix. But he appears to think that he can do better, perhaps for a team, because apparently they were both unhappy with each other, which is also a bit odd considering when you remember back to the start of the season when obviously they're doing fairly terribly, as they still are. But that team player mode he had in Bahrain was like, yeah, we're doing terribly, but come on, guys, we can get this sorted. And he was kind of really motivating everyone to do well. And then not even halfway through the season, they're like, yeah, no, I'm gone. Bye, guys. I'm not doing this. And this also really curious question of where does he go? Haas is the only real option, I feel like, but then I'd feel sorry for Behrmann because he's the next on the hit list, essentially. Does he leave F1 for good? And if he does go somewhere, where does he go? Because does anyone want him at the moment, considering the driving style we know from him? Like, we get it occasionally from drivers, as we talked about last time, where you'll have run-ins, you'll have a Rosberg-Hamilton situation in 2016, but then it will never happen again with those two drivers or with them and another teammate. You'll get a bit of that, but has that been consistently trouble, the run-ins he's had with teammates over the years, that you'd be looking at Ocon and going, well, we've got all these rookies in F2 that deserve a seat in either Alpine or somewhere else in F1, and we've got drivers that would like to come back. I mean, we saw Hulk come back after 10,000 years out in the wilderness and make a good go of it. So I'm not quite sure where he goes, because if it's not Haas, who's gonna want him?
On a side note, I feel like F1's giving me trust issues because they'll say, like, a driver will be like, oh, I'm really happy with my team. We're continuing a really great future together. 2 days later, I'm leaving the team. And you're like, oh, okay. But yeah, in terms of Esteban Ocon, see, when he got dropped from Force India, then Racing Point, now Aston Martin in 2018. I thought it was a shame because he had potential and I was glad when he made his return after a year out. But when he came back, for me, he just didn't particularly set the world alight. I don't know whether, 2020 COVID, he didn't fare well against Ricciardo. Ricciardo finished fifth that year, whilst Ocon finished 12th, and there was 57 points between them, not forgetting that they only did 17 races that year.
And arguably, that was his strongest season to date.
Yeah, I mean, 2021, he had the win in Hungary, but Alonso beat him by 7 points. He then beat Alonso in 2022 by 11 points, but Alonso had an absolutely torrid time that year with the engine, thanks to me buying Alonso merch and cursing him for the entire year. And by then,
You haven't bought
Alonso.
Ocon merch this year by any chance, have you?
No, this is a
I've got to
one-off.
check.
Sorry. But by then, Alonso had had enough of being teammates with him as well. And then Gasly beat him last year, but it was close between them, only 4 points between them. And considering then Ocon had Alonso's really bad luck, and none of the DNFs that he had were his fault, I think being only 4 points behind Gasly was pretty commendable. I can't blame him for last season. I think he had a good season. And obviously this year it's been hard to measure because they've just had,
Nowhere.
yeah. And you really want to support Ocon because, him and his family had to sacrifice a lot to get into F1. They sold their house, they lived in a caravan. You want his story to end up good. But I don't know where he would go within sort of circling back to your
Formula
question. I
One,
don't
never
know where
mind motorsport.
I just don't know where he would go in terms of Formula One. I mean, he was always backed by Mercedes, but I don't think Mercedes are Mercedes going to look at him anymore? Probably
Well,
not.
Mercedes have this thing of, we're considering all options and then are basically just going to do what they want with Kimi Antonelli anyway, regardless of where he finishes in F2. They're just seemingly determined to put him in that seat. And if you take Mercedes out of it, well, you're not going to Red Bull, you're not going to Ferrari or McLaren, so that's the top team's gone. Aston Martin, yeah, essentially there's a seat supposedly on offer there, but there's not. Alpine, it'd be weird if he went back there immediately, because what's the point in firing him? Williams, you've got to think they're looking for a driver that can help build the team, and they've already got Alex there. They want either a rookie or someone a bit more experienced. So, Conte's kind of on the same level, so that's not going to work. Haas, maybe, if they replace Magnussen. But again, you've got a lot of options there. They already have Hülkenberg in that role, and he's more experienced than Ocon. So, yeah, Ocon's had more success in terms of podiums and everything else, but Hulk's a safer pair of hands, it feels like. And RB's not going to take him. And I think that's all the teams. So far,
Yeah.
2-2. It's, I think it goes back to what you're saying there about wanting your story to go well.
Yeah.
It comes back to that argument of, just because you like a driver doesn't mean they're good, or doesn't mean that they deserve to stay. In the same way that we were talking about Ricciardo earlier, we'd love nothing more for him to have this wonderful comeback and get into Red Bull, at least win some races, and then go off into the distance, if not fight for a championship. If it doesn't happen, though, we'll be a bit cut up. But it happens. And we've seen this with a lot of drivers. I mean, Jesse in particular, he wants to die on the cross for Giovinazzi. But it was never going to happen. And that's just how it goes sometimes. And it shows the brutality of the sport, but it also shows that you're only as good as your last race. And your reputation for previous years will only help you so much with that in terms of how much leeway you get. And I think that's what partly helping Perez. It's what helps Hamilton, because if he'd just been kind of a middle-level driver and he's then suddenly dropped off after when the regulation changed, you'd be getting rid of him. But he's the seventh-time world champion, so you give him a bit more credit due, because you know that that's not just luck. But Ocon, he doesn't really have that. He's been able to capitalize here and there on the opportunities, but there's never been that bad a thing. So I don't know what happens with him. I mean, I jokingly said to an unamused Jesse that he goes to Demolition Derby. That didn't seem to take to him for some reason. But in terms of who replaces him, then you've got a couple
Magnussen.
of thank exactly. You've got the two obvious contenders for their Alpine Junior Academy, which are Jack Doohan, which we get into in a minute, and Kushmayni. If Gasly also decides, I've had enough of this terrible car, maybe you get a rookie lineup there next year, which wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. You have an embedding year in 25, and you see what you can capitalize on in 26. Schumacher's the other option, just because he's got the links to them. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's the only other kind of candidate, because aside from anyone who isn't a rookie or a semi-rookie, who actually wants to go to Alpine right now?
Well, that would be the other thing. I think, in terms of the current grid, the only driver I can think of who might want to is Yuki Tsunoda. But why are they gonna? Why would Alpine have a talent pool and then not use it?
I mean,
It's
they've been
probably.
famously not very good at getting the drivers into F1, so that's potentially the reason there.
The only other option, other than the sort of the Doohan and Mining, Mick Schumacher.
Yeah. But again, I don't see that happening necessarily, which, nothing against Mick, he deserved a bit longer in F1, I think. But I don't know, you've got all this fresh talent that deserves a spot, and rightly or wrongly, with how Schumacher had his time in F1, he's had his shot in that respect, if you're going to be brutal about it. So you'd rather want someone like Doohan or Mainey. And Ewan definitely seems to be number one on the list, and I'm all for it. He's going to get to do FP1 in Canada immediately in Ocon's car. And I'm going to be very interested to see how that goes for him because he's a driver. He's kind of their version of Lawson in that we've been waiting so long for him to get his shot, and it's annoying it's taken this long, but I'm glad that this is finally happening. I'd be very happy if he does end up being the driver there next year, and I just hope that it goes better for him than it did for Mick and Haas when he came in, and that it's not just his 2 years in a terrible car and you're done now, because he deserves a lot better.
Maybe it's just that Esteban Ocon's star sign doesn't align with his teammates. Maybe they've all just gone against him. I mean, let's have a look. He's the 17th of September. So what does that make him? A Virgo?
I love how you're asking me. I mean, you're clearly the person for this sort of thing.
Let's have a look. 17th of September star sign is a Virgo. So Virgo, look at Virgo compatibility. So what, Fernando Alonso is a Leo, the second to worst pairing.
I love that you
The
have that committed to memory.
no, I've got it on my I've looked it up. The worst one is Aquarius, which is, I believe, Pierre Gasly's. So this kind of makes sense. Cancer third best compatibility, which was Daniel
Perez.
Ricciardo's sign. So they didn't have a horrible time with each other, were they? But they were, I
No, but it
can't
wasn't
remember.
particularly brilliant either, I don't think. It was just kind of the least worst pairing.
Yeah, his best would be Capricorn or Taurus. So Capricorn is Lewis Hamilton, not gonna
That's not
happen.
gonna happen.
Taurus, I think Yuki Tsunoda.
Is this what you're gonna base your prediction on then for who goes into L? What's Jack doing? If he's a Taurus too, then you've got something to work with here.
So Jack
But
Doohan.
then again, he doesn't need to be compatible. He needs to be compatible with Gasly.
Jack Doohan is the 20th of January, which I think might be Capricorn. It could be on 20th of January. Star sign. Oh, it's Aquarius. So it would be an Aquarius and Aquarius lineup. Should we look up how that would be? Aquarius
In theory,
compatibility.
that should work quite nicely because you've got two from the same pack. So him and Gasly should be fine.
Fourth worst. He'd work really well with the Libra. So that's Max Verstappen, Charles Leclerc territory.
So we get rid of Perez and we put Doohan into the Red Bull to make that a brilliant
Yes.
combination, do we?
What's Sergio Perez's star sign? He is 26th of January, which makes him an Aquarius again. A lot of Aquariuses.
I'm trying to figure out how to put this on a chart for social media. I might leave that to you. Predicting Alpine's 2025 lineup based on star signs by Ellie Mae Taylor.
Aquarius compatible. Well, we'll go with Aquarius compatibility because then we need someone compatible with
Well,
Gasly.
Doohan and Gasly, basically.
A Libra is the most compatible.
And
So
which month is that? Yeah, Max has happened.
Max Verstappen, Charlotte. It's end of September, start of October.
Check
So
when Kushmine's birthday is.
or does Max Verstappen just make a shock
Because
change
it'd be a
now?
massive shock if he went to Alpine. He's like, I want a challenge. I'm going to get an Alpine. Like, oh, Christ, you've got a challenge on your hands now.
Kushmine is the 22nd of September. I think that's a Libra. So that's it, it's Kushmine.
So, okay. Okay, so to summarize, Through the power of star signs, research by LA May Taylor, we predict here at the Undercut Podcast that Kushmani will indeed partner Pierre Gasly at Alpine for 2025, as their star sign compatibility is the best out of all the options that we have here today. So when that happens, that's why. And you will have LA May to thank, and she'll be doing palm readings and star sign readings accordingly, at her discretion. Do DM her on Instagram to book those in advance, as those will go very quickly once this prediction comes true. Getting back to Canada itself, though, for the Grand Prix, as well as Jack Doohan taking part in FP1 instead of Ocon, there have been a couple of interesting bits of news just related to the Grand Prix itself. The first of which is that turns 8 and 9 now have a grass runoff instead of the old concrete option. So these are the turns just before the big hairpin lead onto the back finish straight, basically, before the chicane leading to the World Champions, which not against, to be honest, as long as it doesn't necessarily then lead to a repeat of the Hamilton and Vettel incident from a few years ago that then gives us a very controversial ending at the end of that race with a 5 second penalty. Not too much to say. That would just be interesting to see. At least it's not a concrete wall or anything like that. So if you miss it slightly, bam, you're gone. But again,
Yeah, it just kind of makes things a bit riskier if you dip a wheel over. So it'll make them stay within track limits.
yeah, it's more of a spin option there, which, if the weather forecast for the weekend is accurate at the moment, then we're in for a slippy old time anyway. So we're going to very much want to stay in track limit as it is. And the last bit of news I've got here is that for some reason, the trophy for the Grand Prix will be created slash designed by artificial intelligence, for which I've written a short but sweet note of, for fuck's sake. Your thoughts, Ellie May?
I mean, AI is good to help with some things like helping predict race strategies, but to create a sh trophy? Why? I mean, you've got some incredible artists out there. This is their work to do stuff like that. They need paying.
Canada
But
has
AI.
some great trophies in the past. They don't
Yeah,
need help from artificial
exactly.
intelligence to do this.
I mean, AWS themselves, and I quote, said the trophy's design incorporates, and I'm not going to escape the Somerset accent, swirls and vortices, symbolizing the
Squirrels.
complex swirls.
Squirrels.
Swillel.
Swirls, yes.
Swirls, those RLs just get me every time. Symbolizing the complex simulations run on AWS used in an F1 car development. And then so AWS produced hundreds of variations in less than 10 seconds, and then a panel reviewed them and made a decision. I mean, annoyingly, I quite like the trophy. I just don't like how they got to it.
Well, it's the thing, it's the same process as why would you not just get well in advance of the Grand Prix a whole, just open the floodgates to all these designers, send in your designs, and we'll get a panel to look at them and we'll take the best options and whittle it down. It's exactly what they've done. They've just taken the human element out of it, and you could have a better trophy than the one you've got.
Well, I don't want to sound like I'm sponsored by AWS here because I'm not. I just want
But
to give up. Yes, but I want to give our lovely listeners a chance to go to an F1 race. It might, might not be in your financial budget to attend an F1 race. It's not in mine. And I made it kind of sound like I was giving them the opportunity as well. I'm not. But you can, they AWS enjoyed the process so much. You can have a go at designing your own trophy, and the winner gets an all-access VIP trip to a 2025 F1 Grand Prix. I assume it's a Grand Prix of your choice, but they haven't actually said that. They've just said a 2025 F1 Grand Prix.
no, this will be how they fill seats at Vegas.
Yeah.
But yes, that I'll be interested to see that at the weekend. But it's just another kind of frustrating thing that, like you say, it's got so many uses. Focus on where it's useful. This seems to be the theme of the podcast in a lot of ways. Like, focus on what you're good at. Don't step out of your box and try and do things that you're not qualified for. Just leave it alone. Predictions, though, Canadian Grand Prix, it's usually. Last couple of years have been a bit iffy on the Grand Prix, but it's usually a pretty good race. You've got one of the best Grand Prix in history that's ever been there in 2011. Absolutely phenomenal race. Wouldn't mind if we have a repeat of that and we get, I don't even know who to win that one, but it'd be excellent. Who have you got for pole position there?
I've got Lando Norris.
Reasoning.
I have none.
Fair enough. Yes, he's gone for Oscar Piastri, whereas I've gone for Charles Leclerc, just because he will be capitalizing on the Monaco high still a couple of weeks later, and he'll come into qualifying. Won't translate to my podium. We'll sort of translate to yours and Jesse's, though, so let me, why don't you walk us through yours first, rather?
So, oh, I know why I kept choosing Lando Norris, because everyone kept choosing Oscar Piastri. So I thought, I don't want to
You just thought
jinx.
to spite us. Fair enough.
Well, I just thought, I don't want to jinx the poor guy with everyone relying on hope on Piastri. So I thought, well, I'll go for Lando Norris for the win. Charles Leclerc in second and Carlos Sainz in third.
Not a bad reasoning, but it's the awkward thing if you don't want to curse, but you are also very accurate with your predictions, so it feels like a double-edged sword with you there.
Yes, but it was because everyone had chosen Oscar Piastri in some sort of sense, and I was like, oh, if we all do it, what if he has a horrible time?
Yes, he's gone for a Piastri win, which I would absolutely love, which I find interesting because, in the grand scheme of predictions, I'm pretty sure he predicted he gets his first win elsewhere, so he's betting against himself, which is.
May have also been why I didn't put it as well.
That makes more sense.
Yeah,
And you should have thought of that sooner.
I should have.
He's also gone for Charles Leclerc second, and he's gone for Lando Norris third. I've gone for an Oscar Piastri win to coincide with me saying that his first win comes in Canada. I've then gone for Hamilton in second and Verstappen in third, just because wouldn't that be saucy? Fastest lap, Jesse and I have both gone for Sainz. Jesse's reasoning being if two of us do it, it may come true. I'm going to curse at him for when that doesn't happen because it's his fault.
We have tried that as well. Didn't
Quite
work with us.
possibly. No. The one time your
But
prediction doesn't work and help me out for something.
yeah,
Typical
I'm
of you.
sorry.
You've
I know.
gone. You've gone for the McLaren
Oscar.
that we've chosen for everything else for Oscar Piastri, yes.
Yeah. So in some ways he gets the triple.
Yeah, I'm not sure how, but we need a blend of it. We need a blend for this to all. We need all of us to score points, which hasn't actually happened so far this season because I'm still on nil points, much like the UK at Eurovision.
That's what I was about to say.
World prediction. I've gone for Aston Martin double points because they've only scored points in three Grand Prix this year. What is happening to them? Is that not brutal?
Oh,
Makes
that's
your
terrible.
makes your world prediction a little bit more believable.
I've gone for a Haas qualifies in the top five. I mean, Nico Hülkenberg qualified third last year, didn't he? So. If
He
it rains
did.
again,
Which it
yeah.
very well won't. Yeah, no, very, very wild. She's got a method to her madness. This is why we don't trust you with the predictions. Jesse's gone for neither Mercedes in the points, which would be a bit wild, but also it's a track that we're not sure last year. They've not picked it. It's very hard to pick Mercedes at this point. We don't know where they're good and where they're bad at this point. They're just consistently doing. So maybe.
It kind of seems like we've hedged our bets in the fact that you've been like, well, Mercedes will be really successful and Lewis Hamilton's going to get second, whilst Jesse's like, no, they're going to do terribly.
I put this down to just the emotional damage that Jesse sustained from Esteban Ocon leaving Alpine, and he doesn't know what he's saying. And that's the excuse this week, anyway.
He's not here to
No,
say
no.
otherwise.
Which, while we're there, would you like to get any barbs in for anything while he doesn't have the right of defence on him, on Ocon, on Yuki, on anyone? I should have done a survey really beforehand saying Jesse can't defend himself this week. Please send in your messages.
I mean, the reason he isn't here is because he's commuting down to London to get ready for London Concours. I attended yesterday. I got there in one day. Why can't you live significantly nearer to London than I? Why can you not do it in one day?
It makes a valid point, Jesse, and I'll be interested to hear your reasoning and then ignore it completely in the Canadian Grand Prix review. Do you have any other points you'd like to make before we wrap this episode on this or any other topic to do with Formula One?
No, not really. I mean, it'd be really easy for him to get the train as well. It's like a 45-minute train journey to, I think, Farringdon, and then he could get the Circle line, which is like two stops away to Moorgate, and then it's like a 5-minute walk. He's being.
It's almost like you've researched this just for such an occasion.
Well, no, it's because I always get off at Farringdon to basically use the entire line, either to go to been to his or go to my friends in East Croydon. So I used that stretch of like train line so much that I know how easy it is. So then I'm like, well, you have such easy options and you've decided to drive the whole of the M25.
As we're on the conclusion of this episode, I think we can make two conclusions here. Number one, everyone in F1 at the moment should just stay in their lanes and do what they're good at and not attempt anything outside of the boxes. This is not a think outside the box scenario. Do what you're good at, thrive there, and do not step past those bounds. And also, Alpine, Aston Martin, Jesse. What are you doing? And why are you not doing better? Sort yourselves out and please do it soon because it's getting to the point where we're going to have to throw interventions. And unfortunately, Alpine and Aston Martin, that's going to be a lot trickier for us to do because you're quite vast companies and we'd have a lot of time trying to organize all of that. Jesse, very easy. So please pull your socks up and just take the train next time.
I mean, yeah, I mean, maybe he doesn't like public transport. Maybe he
Doesn't
doesn't
like
like.
hanging out with the general public.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Because I, on the other hand, when public transport works, I love it.
You're a woman of the people.
I am.
People
I
love
mean,
you.
I was sat. Thank you. I was sat on the train. Well, I was sat on the tube yesterday, thinking, you know what? I could quite happily just sit the entire Hammersmith line and just go up and down.
I
This is
think
quite
that's
nice.
a symptom of a different problem that potentially means you need a hobby, but we'll get to that at another point, I think.
It's just like when you go on the tube, nothing changes. And it's kind of that thing of in a world where things are ever changing, it's stability. And it's just really nice and kind of, I don't know, reassuring and relaxing that things will just never change.
Which is a nice way of circling back to why Red Bull have chosen to retain Perez for another 2 years. So, on that very poetic note from Eddie May, that is all we've got time for on this week's episode. In the meantime, if you want any more from Eddie May, aside from Instagram, where we can see your pictures from yesterday at time of recording, earlier this week, is there any other content on there or anywhere else you would like to promote in the meantime?
I mean, if you're gonna look at my London Concours content, then you may as well look at my Brands Hatch content too.
As for myself, this week I shall promote my latest interview over on Is It Fast, where I have a conversation with endurance racing driver Sally Erdman. So go and check that out. And Jesse writes for someone or other. He never mentions it, so he can not quite tell you where at the moment, but I'm sure that if you message him, he'll tell you. In the meantime, we'll be back very soon with a review of the Canadian Grand Prix. And if you want some feeder series content, we do have a recently published episode reviewing all of the Formula 3 action up to date now with Inside F2's Fraser Ford. We're looking at Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, Imola, and Monaco, and Australia. Not Saudi Arabia because they didn't go there, so they just did Australia. And we do a deep dive into everything to do with Formula 3, so it's all very interesting, so do go and check that out. And in the meantime, thank you very much for listening, and we will see you again soon.